So, congratulations. You've made it to week 4 of this series. That probably deserves a medal of some description. But we've started out on this series looking at the whole of the Bible in around 8 weeks, and we're more or less at the halfway point. I think technically when I sit down, that's the halfway point. Because we started looking a little at what the Bible is and how we might get the most out of it, before turning to creation and how God made the world good. And although mankind turned it bad, God resolved to make it good again. And then we how God called Abraham and promised that his family would bless all families and entered into that covenant relationship with these people. Then last week, Graham was looking at God's rescue of the nation of Israel, calling them out of slavery, out of Egypt, and calling Moses to lead them out of that, and then for Joshua to lead them into the promised land. So now we're picking up the story of God's relationship with his people and looking at the period of the judges and kings. Possibly one of the bits that's not as well known as some of the others. When we get on to the Gospels and Jesus and the early church, there's a lot of texts that certainly I'm more familiar with, and that may be the case for others as well. But we're in a period where actually there's some quite challenging bits in there. And to put this in context of the period we're looking at, this morning we're looking at from the point from where God's people entered the Promised Land through to where Solomon died and the kingdom dividing in around 930-ish BC. The dates are a little flexible depending on which scholarly journal you read on that side. And that's where we'll pick up next week the story of God's people through looking at the exile and into the prophets. So in terms of books of the Bible, we're really talking at the moment of some of the history books of Joshua, Judges, Ruth, Samuel, Kings and Chronicles. And as I said, this section of the Bible contains some very challenging and quite dark themes at times. In some ways, I think there should almost be at the beginning of this section some sort of health warning like you get on TV that says actually graphic descriptions of violence ahead. But we do have to remember, though, that in amongst some of that violence, that this is generally not because God is condoning that violence, but much of it represents the mess that God's people had got in and the cultures that were around them. And through that turning away from God and the violence we see there. This morning, though, there's essentially two themes I'd like to pick up. Firstly, looking at the nature of what was happening in the history of Israel with the judges. And secondly, look at what was going on when Israel decided that it needed to be ruled by kings, and perhaps what that might mean for us. So first, I'm not into poetry particularly, but this is my very, very favourite poem. So sit yourself back, because this will take not long. And it's by my favourite poet, a guy called Steve Turner. History repeats itself. It has to. No one listens. Maybe I like it because it's short, but actually I'll read it again. History repeats itself. It has to. No one listens. Judges, the bit where we're starting out today. We've got records of about 14 judges in the Bible. Some of them famous, the names you'll know. Some less so. I think we've probably all heard of Gideon, Samson, Samuel, and probably Deborah. But perhaps Shamgar, Tola, and Abdon have maybe escaped their consciousness. And to be fair, they only get the briefest of mentions. Several of them only get a verse or so. And a little background to bear in mind at this point is that the title of judge here has very little, if anything, to do with what we think of judges in the modern context. This isn't about someone sitting in a legal system in a wig presiding judgment over someone who's been declared guilty. But these are charismatic leaders of the people. People who are often leading their nation into battles and in through wars. And in some way directing the moral compass of the people around. Trying to direct them and guide them back to God within there. So if we turn back to our reading, Judges 3, 5 to 11. We see the start of a cycle that was to repeat itself time and time again. If we pick up in verse 7. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 8, the anger of the Lord burned against them. Verse 9, but when they cried out to the Lord, he raised up for them a deliverer. Turning to verse 11, there was peace in the land. We see God's people turning their back on God, things going wrong, and God's judgment kind of being apparent in the situation. But then we see God's people cry out for forgiveness and turning back to God. And God, amazingly, raises up some form of saviour, someone to save them from the situation. And then there is a time of peace. And we can see echoes of last week's narrative of how God's people cried out to him, and he raised up Moses to save them and lead them out of the situation. Of how there were times when people turned their back on God, and times of salvation when the people cry out to God. Alternatively, we can look forward to next week, and the way that in the midst of dark places, God raises up prophets to warn people of the consequences of turning their back on God. Or perhaps, most significantly, we can look at the ultimate saviour from God, of Jesus, who came to provide the most amazing salvation, the ultimate demonstration of God's grace for us. But this week, we're in the period of the Judges. And we see this cycle repeated again and again, of people in the good times beginning to forget about God, to concentrate on their own agendas, and of how gradually over time, a nation turned its back on God, and that through that falls into tough times. We see the amazing, bountiful, promised land seeing dark times of violence and unrest. But then, amazingly, we see how God's amazing grace provides a way back. His unending love not giving up on us, but remaining true to his promises, even when we don't hold true to ours. And for me, that's where it begins to get a bit more personal. This isn't just something about some faraway nation living 3,000 years ago in a different part of the world. Maybe there's something in there that can at times ring true about ourselves. We have times where we feel close to God. The relationship is amazing, and we have a real sense of joy from our walk with God. Other times, it might feel like we're in darker times, where the joy of the Lord seems like an alien concept, something far away. The thing is, when God's people move away from God, God doesn't reciprocate in that. We might move away, but God stays true to us. Just think of the prodigal son in Luke 15. Our father there is, with his arms outstretched, loving us and giving us a way back to him. And the same was true in the period of the Judges. Despite the dark and terrible things you see recorded, when the people turned and cried out to the Lord, he was there, raising up someone to save them and lead them back into that relationship with him. For me, it's curious that the problems seem to occur in the good times. When there was peace in the land was when God's people tended to drift. When they had it easy, somehow they got complacent and drifted. And perhaps when times were good, they were starting to praise themselves, thinking about how clever they were providing for everything, and not giving God the praise and reminding themselves of Jehovah Jireh, God as provider, and that as much as they might not want to be, that they need to remember that they are not God. Perhaps it's a reminder that our prayers and our cries out to God are not just for times of struggle, but actually in the times of celebration and when things are going well, we need to be turning to God with praise and celebration, of keeping our focus on maintaining our relationship with God through the ups and the downs, of fixing our eyes on the real Saviour who does get us out of this mess. Which in some way brings us on to the second theme for this morning. The recognition that during the time of the Judges, the people felt they had no need of an earthly king. But then, as they drifted from God, as he moved further away from him, they thought they did need an earthly king. Now the reason why they didn't need one initially, because they already had a king. They had the king of the universe, and God there as their king. But the more the people drifted from God, the more they didn't recognise him as their king. And we read in 1 Samuel of how the people cried out for a king. They looked around them and saw the other nations with a king and felt they wanted one too. I can only begin to imagine how God might have felt about that, about being the king of his nation, about all that he'd done for them, and them turning around and rejecting him. His people rejecting him as their king and wanting to be like all the other nations around them who worshipped idols and false gods. We read of the warnings he gave the people through Samuel, but still they persisted and wanted to be just like everyone else. And I wonder if there's anything in there that says something to the wider church today. Where there are aspects of life in the cultures around us, cultures that don't recognise God, and we think we want some of that as well. I was reading an article recently about some of the aspects of the American church, where parts of that seem so focused on money and wealth, of pastors of megachurches buying private jets to glorify God, of modelling that success culture that's so caught up within capitalism. I'm wondering maybe whether there's people who've lost sight of God as king. And maybe about something local here as well. I'll speak personally. For me, one of the big challenges that comes out of this is when I look around at other churches and see what they're doing, I kind of feel the pressure on there. To have super slick worship times with an amazing worship band leading a crowd of thousands. I don't think that will happen here in Lavendon because I'm not sure we'd fit. But actually, I'm not sure that's right for here as well. It's not about looking at what's going on elsewhere. Other churches may be running alpha courses, setting up debt counselling, providing shelters for the homeless, food banks, everything else. That doesn't automatically mean that's what we should be doing here. It's about us here, in this place, being authentic to what God is calling us to do. For us to be able to worship God in this place in a way that is true to how he is calling us. There was a comment someone made a couple of weeks ago that really hit home to me. And it was someone who'd come into the church and found it a lovely place to be. That there was a real honesty and integrity about this place. That it wasn't about performance or pretending that things were different from how they are. But a place where people would come, be themselves, and meet with God. I thank God that that is part of who we are. But also remember the warnings from the judges. It was in the good times where there was peace, where things seemed to be going well, that people sometimes get complacent. I really don't think that's what's happening here, but we need to be on our guard against those things. So let us resolve to hold on to what we have here, that integrity, that honesty, that sense of being a place where we can come as we are without having to pretend that we're something different. And actually we can meet with God here together. Be that on a Sunday morning, a Thursday morning with lots of toddlers running around, or wherever that is, let us hold on to that. So we go back to where we started at Colossians 3. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly, as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts.